Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. What changed from the Trump of 4 years ago to the Trump of now, who is willing to go along with getting U.S. troops involved in a war in the Middle East and putting American civilians who live all over the Middle East and American military installations at risk? Like, you have
to get a
really big reward to get that. Hello, Jamal. Weekly therapy. Wanted to talk to you about the fact that it looks like we might be going to war in the Middle East. I thought we were done with that.
You know, never enough, never enough. It's like we have all forgotten what it was like in the 2000s when the Bush administration took us into war. You could make an argument that Afghanistan was a war that we should have gone into because that's where Al-Qaeda was that attacked us on 9/11. But Iraq, everybody sort of knew Iraq was the wrong place. I used to work for a guy named Bob Graham, who was the co-chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. The line he had that I thought was always the best was, "I'm not mad at George Bush for attacking terrorists. I'm mad at George Bush for not attacking terrorists. Like, why are we in Iraq? That's not where the terrorists who attacked us are. We should be focused on the ones who we need to get." And Iran, why are we going there? We were supposed to be negotiating with these people. Why are we now fighting them?
Well, this is what's fascinating about this America First doctrine under President Trump, is that this is not America's first decision in foreign policy. In fact, the decision to attack Iran was made by Israel, and Benjamin Netanyahu saw an opportunity where all of these key leaders were gathered who are part of the nuclear effort, who are part of their military operations, and he made a decision to do a targeted strike. Now, you can call it preemptive, but there has been nothing released that I know of to American officials about how far along Iran was in their nuclear capability. We know they have the enriched uranium, but you know, are they creating that trigger mechanism? Are they actually building the bomb itself? Even Tulsi Gabbard, who gets all of this intel as the director of national intelligence, has testified before Congress that Iran is not there. That's not what's happening. So Israel did something that made sense for them and their politics. You could argue that it is not a good idea for Israel to be at war at three fronts: Gaza, Lebanon, and now Iran. Plenty of people in Israel are making that argument. What I am interested in is what this means for American involvement, because the United States is the number one patron for Israel. Everyone sees that and understands that, particularly with the military cooperation. So when Iran asks the United States to tell Israel to back off, and the president of the United States instead responds with, "Everyone evacuate Tehran," the capital of that city, that gets me worried that the United States is once again about to engage in a war of regime change in a country in the Middle East.
Yes, and as we learned in Iraq, that those things do not go very well. We're not really very good at figuring out what to do next after you topple a regime. And, you know, there also is the hornet's nest problem, right? You step on the nest and all the hornets go flying in a bunch of different directions. So it's not just that we're going to have to be worried about what happens in Iran. It's also what happens to all the people that are upset about this and think this is the wrong move, who now decide they want to take on the United States.
And now... Yeah, now Trump is talking about it as "we," right? It's so quick that connection was made when actually the United States has a lot of leverage on Israel. They made a targeted strike. Retaliation happened. Usually how this goes down between Israel and Iran is the tit for tat, right? And Israel does have the upper hand when it comes to being able to defend its civilians with the Iron Dome. Now, it's terrifying if you're in either country right now, but Israel does have the upper hand when it comes to protecting its civilians from these types of strikes. What Israel does not have is the capability to directly get to the missile development sites inside Iran and to get have missiles that can go deep enough to destroy all of that. That is what the United States has. That is now what Trump is considering doing. When you hear experts on TV say in the next 48 hours, the United States might strike the missile sites in Iran, that's what they're talking about, is the specific capability that only the United States has. And is this the time for the United States to use that? The United States has, we have Americans stationed all over the Middle East. We have army bases all over the Middle East. We have allies. We are in a position of strength until we start to join in on a war that is about getting rid of bad guys. And we don't have an answer for who are the good guys that you put in instead. That's what got us mired in Iraq. And even with Iraq, you had a long-term effort to bring forward intelligence, to convince the UN to come on board, right? This was a coalition of the willing when we did the Iraq war. Trump isn't even pretending to do that. He walked right out of a G7 meeting with all sorts of foreign leaders who could have been allies and have been allies in the past and didn't even try to bring them on board. So it's really, it's a Trump following Netanyahu, not the other way around. And that is not the definition of America first.
So, Naira, this is an interesting point to me because you talk about talking to students, right? And you're now on campus. You spend a lot of time around young Americans and people from around the world. How is that playing for them? I mean, obviously, you know, they've studied a lot about what happened in Iraq. They've studied a lot about, you know, American foreign policy. They've lived through a lot of it when they were young. What do you think they are now? How are they digesting this moment and what their responsibility is to either stop it or abide it?
Students in college right now have no memory of Obama as president. Hmm. They were too young. They were barely in kindergarten at that point. And that definitely gives me perspective on what I'm explaining about foreign policy and U.S. history, because Vietnam is so far back. And then the values of the greatest generation in World War II is just like something that they hear rhetorically, but there's no direct connection to it. What they are connected to for foreign policy is the idea that the United States was stuck in two wars, foreign wars that were called forever wars. There's a whole generation of veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq who don't get the attention or get to make policy about what happens next in foreign affairs. They do get a sense of America needs to take care of itself first because they have faced repeated economic crises. And so they understand this idea of America has said many things about itself and who it is and what it stands for, but the reality has not been there during their lifetime. They have seen one crisis after another domestically and internationally. And so they come to college, even these students I have who really care about public service and want to be involved in policymaking, they're very jaded about what America can do on the world stage. And so that expectation that the United States is an actor for good, they simply don't have that. So then we throw on top of that what's happened in Gaza, what now United States pulling out of all humanitarian aid, and then now potentially being involved in military strikes in Iran. And I'm just like, I don't know what to tell them. And I don't know what to tell all these skeptics about American values and America's stature on the world stage, because the recent record is not good.
So when they look at, the difference between obviously this Israeli strike upon Iran versus, let's say, Ukraine defending itself against Russian aggression and the U.S. ability to help Ukraine. How do they digest the Ukraine war? Is the Ukraine war seen as something more noble, or are they suspicious of it?
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
They definitely get the value of standing up to somebody who's invading your country. Right? And I mean that in the full totality of how that rhetoric has been used domestically and internationally. So they're like, yeah, Russia just rolled in and took a piece of the country. Like, you should stand up to that. They also understand, though, that the United States did not go to the mat for Ukraine. The United States did not send soldiers, right? The United States did everything but take the war to Russia and make Ukraine capable of ending this. And that was a very serious Biden decision received criticism from multiple different sectors, because Biden did not want it to be that the United States was going directly to war with Russia. So now,
I mean, there's a good reason for that, right? I mean, like, everybody's got nuclear weapons. And one thing you don't want to do is pop off, you know, with a country that has nuclear weapons.
So now you take two countries with leaders who are very bombastic, do pop off, and the United States is no longer the rational negotiator between the two. Hmm. In fact, the United States is very deeply embedded with one side, Israel, but not to the degree of saying, okay, you met your objective, let's dial this back, because we're not trying to drag everybody else into this. They're like, all right, let's go. Let's make this happen. And that kind of bravado of, oh, Trump saying, well, we're not going to take out the prime minister or the Ayatollah just yet, but we're capable of doing it. We can do it. It's kind of like, okay, what are we getting from this? Where is this going?
And that's the cowboy shit.
It's not going anywhere good.
Yeah, that's the cowboy shit.
It's not going anywhere good.
Right. Yeah, no, that's the cowboy shit. And then what you see is, you know, Trump is playing to all the audiences. I mean, on one hand, there's an audience obviously sitting in Tehran that they are trying to communicate with about whatever the future of this conflict is going to be. There's also Trump's faithful about, you know, the MAGA people, many of whom aren't really that excited about going to war, right? Like, they are, as you said, they're probably more similar to some of the people who you're teaching every day. That they have lived the last 20 years of this forever war that we all lived through.
He has lost Trump on this issue. Trump has lost Marjorie Taylor Greene, who said Trump always said that we weren't going to be going to war in Iran, so why are we listening to another country? Tucker Carlson, who said if Israel wants to go do this, let him do it alone. What does this have to do with us right now? And even Steve Bannon, like, that is the MAGA coalition right
now.
What he has left then are the neocons, the ones who have always thought that the U.S. military can be used to spread democracy and change countries and regimes. Okay, thank you, John Bolton, but that's what got us Iraq and Afghanistan and ultimately withdrawals from both without any sense of things being navigated or managed in a way that's good for the people on the ground. That's ISIS, 20 years of war got us.
Mm-hmm. Like, ISIS spawned from those conflicts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm just wondering, you know, as people are, the thing about America to me is that we are all the things. We are both noble and we are incredibly self-interested, right? We are both rooted in historic values and we are rooted in economic benefit of the moment. And we have these figures who are historic and who are well-meaning and see the world beneficently, like a Barack Obama. And then we have the craven ones like Donald Trump. We are all the things. We have, you know, so in like many places, the thing about this moment is, I think, is probably erasing the idea of exceptionalism, because when you finally accept the fact that we are both a country with founded in liberty and slaveholders at the same time, right? Every man has a right to vote and every woman is subject to her husband, right? At the same time. So that takes away this idea of the magic Americanness to me. And now we have to deal with the reality of the country that we are and which side of the fence are we going to lean toward? And so we've got to, as political actors, I think how I think about it, those of us who are kind of in the persuasion business, the policy making business, we've got to persuade people to go along with the better angels of their nature. And I think, as I said here before, if we agree, if Lincoln, when he said there are better angels, it must mean that we acknowledge there are worse angels. And the worst angels right now are having their day. And if we're going to build a better world, we've got to figure out how we persuade people to listen to their better angels.
Listen, there's an argument to be made for when an enemy is weak, you should strike. And Iran is not a good actor on the world stage. But there's also an argument to be made for have that discussion, have it be something that is deliberate and engaged and brought together with other allies. Mm-hmm. At the moment, that's not what is happening. What is happening is Trump has realized he cannot rein in Netanyahu, that Netanyahu is not listening. He's informing Trump of things that are happening, and that's about it. So in that scenario, you take a personality like Trump, rather than looking weak, he, like you said, wants to cowboy up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It becomes more about his bravado and that strong brand of America that, frankly, most of the world has been able to see through because they lived and experienced the wars that we were fighting abroad were happening on their soil.
Right.
So it's shocking how much I agree with Tucker Carlson on this issue.
It's amazing, right?
If you're going to do America first, right? Yeah. If you're going to do America first, at least do that the right way.
Right.
I don't understand what this mix match, you know, I'm changing this as often as my ideas as often as I change my underwear thing is going on.
You know, I saw Anne Applebaum talking earlier, and I think she said something that is incredibly, the writer from The Atlantic, is she at The Atlantic? Mm-hmm. She said, you know, with Trump, every conversation, every engagement is only about that particular conversation, only about that particular engagement. There is no strategy. And that's the thing that comes crystal clear about him. The only strategy is about whether or not he looks strong, is making any benefit off of the engagement. And once he gets it, he has no thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen the year after this. And so he's willing to, you know, attack the South African president when he's sitting next to him because it makes him look strong to all the people who he needs in the MAGA coalition or whatever in that particular moment, without thinking about what does that mean to the whole rest of the world that basically united against the people that he seems to be now defending, you know, who are the white Afrikaners. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to figure out how to create any strategic plan around someone who has zero obligation to be true to even something he said 15 minutes ago.
And something that this seemed to be the thing, not engaging Iran, is actually what had him break with his first national security advisor, rather his first term national security advisor, John Bolton, mm-hmm. who was one of the architects of the Iraq War, would love to see the United States go in and change the government of Iran. Like, all right, John Bolton's been consistent. Trump is not. And I'm curious to see as it comes out, what changed that? Was it just the catching him at the right time of feeling that he needed to have some bravado and look strong? Like what changed from the Trump of 4 years ago to the Trump of now, who is willing to go along with getting US troops involved in a war in the Middle East and putting American civilians who live all over the Middle East and American military installations at risk? Like
I'm not convinced.
A really big reward to get that.
I'm not convinced that we end up with the troops. Here's what I think where we are. I think where you started is exactly right. Trump saw that Netanyahu went into Iran and was having success in the air war, right, mm-hmm. against Iran. And the one thing he will not do is be seen as a weakling. So now he wants to side up with his team that he thinks is winning. But I don't think at the end of the day, he knows what happens when you put troops on the ground and how that begins to spiral. I'm very curious to see whether or not he goes that far or if this is really a talk game, him dropping bombs from the sky, that sort of thing. But it's
right.
not actually
right.
him
well, he,
putting
is,
American skin on the ground in the game.
Trump is already saying we control the skies in Iran.
Right.
Like, okay, it's Israel, but I get it. Those are likely jets provided
American
by the United
jets.
States. So
sure.
now... Yeah, the United States is just openly claiming the reality that other people always say, which is America is complicit in whatever Israel does. But all right, Trump is
just can't even keep the fake, the facade up long enough. They came up with some story in the National Security Council, right? About like, oh no, not us. We didn't do it. Marco Rubio's like, oh no, it's you guys. And then Trump 3 days later is like, no, we got it. We did it.
We did it. All right, we got it. All right. So he's already all in on that.
Yeah.
Everything. Like there's no rhetorical fiction here to hide behind. But understand, we already have boots on the ground in the Middle East. We have bases in Qatar, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, right? The United States' control of the Middle East fundamentally relies on its military relationships and how it's boosted and then maintained the militaries of several countries. Iran knows that as well. So the more he claims we have covered the skies and takes American credit for what Iran is dealing with and suffering right now, the more Iran is likely to retaliate on the people who are already there, which is Arab allies with U.S. military. And that's how this starts to spread and become a much bigger issue, as you said, because the strategy has not been thought through.
Yeah, and that and not thinking through that strategy is the thing that's going to end up with us ass backwards in the middle of a shooting war in the Middle East again, and that's what people are rightfully nervous about. Look, there could be a case to be made, and I think that some reasonable people believe that Iran had to be dealt with. Perhaps this was always the way that it was going to end. I don't know that the Obama security team would have agreed with that, and they thought they had an agreement to figure this out. But maybe at this point, you can't go back and get a do-over. This is the point where we were, and this is some place we were going to get to. But like you said, there's no thought being put into it about building a coalition, about getting support. If you don't have the people on your side, you don't have anything, as the historians would say. Oh. I just think this is the problem with where we are, and Trump doesn't seem to care. He's just going to sort of cowboy his way through the whole thing until he can find a way to gracefully exit like a drunk in a bar who's steadily talking trash as he heads toward the door.
Well, as he's heading out that door, you're going to see gas prices already going up. Iran has the ability to stifle oil tankers and trade coming out of the Strait of Hormuz, the Red Sea. So it's already, once these strikes started, you started to see the price of gas tick up in the last couple of days. That ties directly to inflation. The challenges we're seeing here, still have no budget bill. So it is this is a crisis moment for Trump of global and domestic proportions. And, you know, I guess we'll just have to see how he feels in the next 48 hours to figure out if the United States is involved in a war in Iran.
Yeah, that is the danger. Let me ask you one more question before we go. What are the other countries who are watching this thinking? What do you think that as the United States kind of fumbles around in this, changes its story, goes back and forth, what's Russia thinking at this moment? We notice that they've been sort of quiet about this. We've seen some of the other Middle Eastern countries, like the Saudis, don't seem to be, you know, other than videos of rockets going overhead, we don't really hear a lot from some of the other countries in the region. What do you think they're thinking at this moment?
Russia has made a very generous and kind offer to take the enriched uranium and protect it. They will go in there and take that, so it's no longer a threat for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. I thought that was one of the best.
Well, they've done that in the past, right?
They did in history.
They did that in Ukraine.
What we really want is Russia to be holding secure, right? Like to really be secure holding enriched uranium. I mean, Russia's already sharing nuclear technology with North Korea and others, and probably has been complicit in some of Iran's development too. So that's how Russia decided to frame its goodwill and how it could help. China is quietly funneling support and weapons to Iran. So that's where they would fall in this part of the equation, because the United States has Israel and Saudi Arabia as its military allies. So the great powers all have a stake and a position in this. What Iran and Saudi Arabia have asked was for the United States to be the cool head to prevail, to help bring both of these countries back from the brink. None of them, I mean, we thought that none of them really want to go to war, because it's war is just not good for the economy or anything in general. But it seems like now that they're both angry enough that they do. And the United States is not playing that diplomatic role anymore.
Well, we are all being left to these two guys, I'm going to be kind, these two criminals, people who are facing criminal charges and criminal penalties, we're being left to them to figure out the future of the world, nuclear-free world. So here we go. Thanks, Naira.
Thanks, Jamal.